Thank you very much. Hi, can you hear me okay? Sounds good. Right, who am I? Yep, so I'm Scott.
Hi.
I'm a video game programmer from Brighton, and sort of in my free time, I make music under the name Cutlasses. And I'm pretty terrible at DIY around the house. I've never really been very good at that. And in fact, that sort of put me off doing a lot of these things to begin with. But I've still managed to do some things and make some instruments. Yeah, I'm pretty much a novice at electronics, really. I'm only just learning. So if I'm lying about anything I'm saying, just shout out and I can probably correct the slide live and we can update it. But yeah, I'm really just going to try and talk about the things that I've learned and picked up and kind of why I found the whole process really exciting. And hopefully, like, if it's something that you're interested in but you're not doing it at the moment, like, inspire you to do it, because it really is quite easy to get started. And once you've got started, it's sort of a bit like a drug. So why would you bother making DIY instruments? Well, the first thing is that you may come up with something completely unique to you. And so in your performance, or however you're using it, no one else has got one. No one else is going to get quite that same sound. And I was at a talk by Helen Lee yesterday, and she said that one of the things that she liked about DIY instruments was the fact that when you'd made something, you were the only one who had it. Therefore, you were the best person at playing that instrument. And I think that's really great, because I don't pretend to be an amazing musician. So if I can master the things that I've made myself, then yeah, that's a nice angle on it. So yeah, they can be experimental and inspire you to do other things. I quite often use them. I'll just mess around with things I've built and record it and then go back to it and kind of cut it up. So it can inspire you to do things that you wouldn't just do, say, in your computer. Sometimes you can save money. Sometimes it's cheaper. Generally, it's probably not, especially when you've started getting obsessed by it and buying all the stuff. It's probably not cheaper, but it can be. And you can learn lots of new skills. I've certainly learned loads of stuff that I didn't know about before. Right, so how do we get started? We've decided we want to make some instruments. Well, what do we have to do? Well, the first thing is get yourself a half-decent soldering iron. You don't need to spend a huge amount of money, but I would advise not just getting those super cheap ones with a plug and a soldering iron on the end. Something where you can temperature control it. It should be absolutely fine. Practice your soldering. You're going to get loads of problems in all sorts of areas. So if you can make your soldering good enough that that isn't the problem, then that will certainly make things simpler when you're debugging things. Yeah, start simple with your soldering. Just get some kits and wires. I mean, it's cheap, but a lot of you here are already building things or good solderers anyway. But if you're not, just yeah, you can't really go wrong. Just get some cheap kits or just solder some components together and just practice. There's loads of YouTube videos about it, so just give it a go. It feels daunting, and I remember getting very frustrated the first few times I tried, but you can get it, and it's not too difficult. So what other things we need? Well, a decent, semi-decent multimeter. If you get an auto-ranging one, that's useful, because you don't need to know the rough resistance of a resistor. If that's what you're checking, you can just it will find that for you. Some snips, so that's like another £5. A digital micrometer. I didn't even know what one of those was until quite recently, but they're very useful, just for measuring when you're building things, seeing how far apart things are, and or the diameter of like a pot shaft or whatever. They're really useful. That little picture there is called a helping hands, and it's just sort of, you can just use it to hold things while you're soldering. And again, they're about £5. And eBay is your friend in this situation. You can get, especially if you're prepared to wait for things to come from China, you can get things super cheap. So I am going to talk about this book briefly. It's the book that sort of got me into it. It's called Handmade Electronic Music: The Art of Hardware Hacking. It's by a guy called Nicholas Collins, and I think it's amazing. And if you are interested at all in getting started, then read that book, because it's really inspirational. Yeah, it's a great book, and it covers a variety of different projects that you can do, from really simple to much more complicated. But it always sort of ties it back into the history of electronic music, and it sort of gave me a good understanding of like where these things had come from and what artists used them and how they got started. So that I found that really interesting as well, because it wasn't something I knew that much about. And so, yeah, it's certainly where I nicked most of my initial ideas in this presentation from. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is a contact mic. So does anyone, who knows what a contact mic is? Right, most of you. Okay. So basically, it's probably the simplest thing that you can make. You can make one for a fiver. You just get these things called piezoelectric discs. So that basically means piezoelectricity is just electricity from pressure, essentially. So they've got a small crystal or ceramic element, and when they're crushed or vibrated, they generate electricity. So the sound vibration will generate electricity. So the interesting thing about contact mics is that because they are picking up vibrations through solid materials, you don't get any of the sound of the room. So you don't hear any reverb, and it's a very, very dry sound. So it sort of sounds unlike you would have ever heard that sound, because you can never hear something without it passing through some air. So that means you can get some really interesting sounds out of them. Yeah, I'll just put a note here to say if you do build one, make sure you use a high impedance input on your preamp or your audio interface. But yeah, so they're really, really simple to build. You can build one in half an hour once you've, you know, once you've practiced. You just need a piezoelectric disc. They are pence from eBay. Some shielded audio cable and a jack. And that's it. And you basically solder the, you see in that diagram that the center of the disc is the hot and the outer is the cold. And you just solder the hot to the tip and the cold to the other part of the jack. And that's it. And you can do that in a couple, you know, literally half an hour if that. And you can make some really cool sounds. So I've just mic'd up a bottle of beer. With a condenser mic and a contact mic, just to kind of get different sounds. But you can attach them to all sorts of things and hit them or scrape them and bang them, and you'll get all these kind of sounds that you won't get in any other way. I also coated mine in this stuff called Plastidip, which I later found out is highly toxic. So I didn't find it out by being ill, someone just told me. So be careful if you do buy that. But it's really good. You can sort of dip your contact mic in that, and it looks like this when you do. And so it's waterproof, reasonably. And yeah, you can sort of attach it to things. Cheese graters are always good. And there's a bit of corrugated card that I can just sort of scrape and make these sounds. This image here is, I did a field recording course at New Haven Fort and found this huge iron kind of pipe. I don't know what it was for, but there's sort of grating in front of it. I managed to wedge a contact mic in between the grating and the pipe and then just bow it with a violin bow. And it sounded amazing. I don't know if hopefully this will work. Are we getting any sound? There we go. Now, you couldn't hear anything when you were just bowing it, but you... And that's completely unprocessed. So I've actually used this in some of my own recordings and then processed it. But even as a completely dry signal, it just sounds like unlike anything. And it certainly doesn't sound anything like that when through the air, you know, what I was listening to. Yeah. So I don't know, maybe that sounds horrible to you, but I really like that sound. So another thing that contact mics are used for is reverb, spring reverbs, which is like a really early form of reverb. You get that kind of like twangy surf guitar sound out of them. And that's basically just in its simplest form. I didn't make these ones, but that's just a contact mic going through, a speaker driving a spring attached to a contact mic. So basically the sound comes out the speaker, vibrates the spring and gets picked up by the contact mic, but there's a delay, so you get that kind of like shimmering delay. And you can see a couple of people have built one in a shoebox or whatever that is. And then just another, so I'm just trying to sort of cover some really simple things that you can do to kind of get you started. And all of these are sort of referenced in that book. But another thing that I did was you can just take the tape head out of an old tape player and wire it directly to a jack. And then you can actually rub that across tapes, and credit cards is a good one, anything that's magnetic, and you can get these kind of weird sort of scratching, a bit like kind of scratching a record player kind of sounds out of them. And it's yeah, they're cool. So those are all the kind of things that are pretty easy to, you know, you can make. And you, for me, that was the thing that went, oh, I made something and it did work. And that's once you've got something working, then you've got sort of inspiration to sort of go on somewhere else. So I think once you've done that, a good, what I did anyway, and I think worked quite well, is to just start building some kits. So there's lots of cheap synth kits around. There's a company called Thonk who do much more expensive Eurorack kits, which are great, and I built a bunch of those. And then there are like smaller companies making their own kits, so 64 Pixels and Racket, and also Lush Projects, but I think they're not actually making any at the moment, so maybe concentrate on the first two. But yeah, those are great. And the one I started with was the Atari Punk console, which is really simple to build. It sounds, well, to my ears, it sounds amazing. I think to most people's ears, it sounds very annoying. Yeah, so that's the kit that comes in, and you can build that in a couple of hours, and it sounds great. And I'm going to be doing a performance tomorrow here, and I'll be showing off some of these things, and you'll be able to hear them in a bit more detail. So once you've built your kit or the thing you designed yourself, then you need to start thinking about, well, I want to protect it so that it's going to last. If I want to take it to performance, I can't just, well, maybe you can take the PCB with wires coming out of it, but it's nice to have it safe. So there's lots of ways of doing this. There's, you can buy like guitar pedal cases, and some of them come pre-painted. You can repurpose a box that already exists, or you can get something laser cut or 3D printed. And I've seen a bunch of 3D printers and since I've been here, so I'm sure that a lot of you know about all this stuff already. This is an enclosure I made out of a mustard tin. They're really cute and they're really nice size to use. It's just a little MIDI controller. I now have loads of mustard powder that I'm struggling to get through. Yeah, they're nice little enclosures. So that's what I did with my Atari Punk console, just in a little moisturizer tub, which I'll show off tomorrow. And that funny Christmas tree looking thing, which I didn't know what it was, is a hole cutter. They're super useful. So, I'd done a bit of this sort of tinkering around with things, and you know, and enjoyed it. But I sort of then, you know, didn't really know where to go from there. And I was doing some live stuff with laptop and guitar, and field recordings and processing them. And I really wanted to be able to use my feet because my hands were full of guitar. So I went to try and find one. And I realized there's actually quite a dearth of small ones, because I wanted to be able to fit everything in one bag when I was doing a gig. And there's that absolutely huge one. It's about this big. Did not fit the bill. And there just didn't seem to be any that really fitted what I needed it for. So I thought, I actually bought one from, I think it was from Japan, just the guy who had made them. And that was really small. It sort of fitted the bill, but you couldn't program it, and it didn't match what I needed it to do. So I took it apart and I was like, it looks quite simple. And I'd heard about Arduino and things like that. I thought, well, maybe I can have a go at this. So so I started reading about Arduino and development boards. And I think this was where I started to really get into the whole idea of, you know, once you do something and it works, it just sort of inspires you to do the next thing. And when that works, you can just get a bit more complicated each time. So I'm guessing that most of you know about Arduino. I mean, how many of you know Arduino? Yeah, pretty much everyone. Okay. So, so you all know about Arduino, and there's other ones that exist. Teensy, BeagleBoard, there's lots of different dev boards. And you can program in C or C++, which is good for me because that's what I do as a job. So it's like, okay, I know I can do that bit. Will I be able to do the hardware bit? So I actually concentrated on Teensy, which is Arduino compatible. It's really small, so it will fit inside a small enclosure. And I'd say it's probably more suitable to doing USB MIDI than the Arduino, just because it sort of supports that out of the box. They're pretty cheap, I think they're about £20. And in fact, there's an even cheaper version called the LC, which if you're just doing MIDI, is absolutely fine for that. So that it can be even cheaper. So that's the data sheet for it. It's a 32-bit ARM chip. So ARM, as I'm sure you'll know, is what's in most of our phones. And you can program it in C. And it's got a bunch of analog and digital ins and outs, which is basically what we need. So it has a really simple C interface, which you all know as Arduino programmers. You can just say digital, right? Here's the pin number. I'd like to set that high, please. And that pin will output a high voltage on, basically 5 volts or whatever the voltage supply is. And so I prototyped all of that on solderless breadboard, which is what that is there. And the good thing about that is that because it's all very low voltage, you can sort of just hack it around and hot plug it till it works, basically, because generally I would have got something wrong and be like, okay, why doesn't that work? And you don't have to worry about, you know, getting a shock or anything. So that's just a very simple version with four LEDs, but without the switches. So that's pretty much the schematic for this MIDI pedal that I made. It's just four switches and five LEDs, and they're all just read in code. And so it was really simple. Once I sort of breadboard it out, it's like, okay, I can do this. It's quite easy. So it's basically four guitar pedal switches, some LEDs, and then the code I wrote, which is pretty short, really. And now I've programmed it, I can configure it to do whatever I want, and I can tie it into my performance and make things work as I need them to work. So so there's four LEDs for when you press the pedals. There's also one for MIDI clock, so I can see the clock, which I still haven't decided whether that's a good thing or not, because it is quite useful to know the time, but also it's really annoying if you're playing in a dark stage because it's all you can see. And I put really low resistance on the LEDs, so it's like blindingly bright. But yes, I don't know if that was a good idea yet. I just mounted it on Veriboard. And I bought a pre-painted guitar pedal enclosure and made myself a little drill hole schematic in Inkscape. And it looked like that. I don't know how well you can see that, but that's just before I drilled it. And there I am drilling it at a very slanty angle. I hope that wasn't actually how I drilled it. Maybe I just did that for a photo, I'm not sure. I now have a drill press, which is one of my best investments. And that certainly makes that a lot easier, because I had a very sweary day one afternoon when trying to drill something and snapped a drill bit. And yes, that's when I got a drill press. So so there it is on Veriboard. I'm not sure why I use such incredibly long wires. So this was quite a long time. This was a few years ago, and I'm not sure why I did that. But it works, and there it is finished. And it still works now. So that... So it gives me this level of control, as I said, and it's pretty short in terms of code. So, and all this stuff's on GitHub. So anything that you want to read about, it's all up there. And I'll put this presentation up there as well. So in terms of things I learned from building that was, get a hole cutter. Don't try and use massive drill bits. That's not a good idea. Buy enough components so you can keep a working prototype. Harvest your prototype to build your final product, because then when it doesn't work, you don't have anything to refer to. These are things all learned from experience. And when you're making a drill sheet, bear in mind that the drill sheet might be two-dimensional, but the thing is actually three-dimensional. So where I'd put my holes to drill the switches was actually also where I drilled the hole to put the USB, and they basically occupied the same space, which doesn't really work. Luckily, I managed to fiddle it around till it worked, but yes, so think about that. This is a very specific bit of advice, but don't flash your Teensy through an unpowered USB hub, because it will brick it. And it's fine, you can flash it again directly, but it just took me ages to work out that's what had gone wrong. So once I'd sort of got my confidence up and built this MIDI pedal, it's like, oh, this is cool, I can build stuff, it's going to be fun. So I heard about Eurorack, and I don't know how many of you are aware of Eurorack. Show of hands for Eurorack. Okay, still quite a lot of you. So it's a modular synth format. And I really like the look of it. It's very visually interesting. Although I find all the cables sort of upset my OCD a little bit. I prefer the look of them when there's no cables plugged into them. But that's just me. But they are super expensive. So this isn't mine, but yeah. So there's someone's modular synth. I imagine there's tens of thousands of pounds worth of equipment there. So yeah. So I sort of decided that if I was going to do any stuff in Eurorack, that I was going to have to DIY it, because it would make it a bit cheaper, but also I'd get the fun of building it, and it would, because I built it myself, I've thought maybe I would use it a bit more or get a bit more invested to it, which I think it did, and that worked. So I got a couple of kits from Thonk. But I really wanted to make my own module, and I like the idea of doing the whole process of, you know, making the hardware, designing the panel, and sort of get, you know, being involved in each process. So I started with this kit called the Radio Music, which is by a chap called Tom Whitwell, who does music thing. And it's inspired by John Cage and Carl Stockhausen's radio compositions. So you can put audio onto an SD card and it will sort of cut between the audio, and that how it does that is controlled by control voltage that's going into it. And that's Teensy based. So I was like, okay, I know about Teensy. I sort of understand that. And from building that, I suddenly learned a whole load of new stuff. I was like, okay, that's how you'd get power to the Teensy. Right, okay. Oh, that's what a voltage regulator is. Right, okay. And so just building these kits, I sort of slowly started to learn what these things were for. And I've now written my own firmware for the Radio Music, which is basically a piano player. So it has a single piano sample that it then plays pitch based on the control voltage. So you can kind of give it, basically play it like a piano, a very, very lo-fi, slightly crap sounding piano. But it does have reverb on it, and it sounds good enough. So once I'd done this, I sort of started to get a little bit obsessed by Teensys. When I found out they had this audio library, I really sort of, it kind of keyed into the things that I like, which are like programming, tick, electronics, yes, sound, composition, yeah. Okay, so I sort of really bought into making stuff on the Teensy. I've made a bunch of different audio effects for Teensy. I'm just going to look at one that I made, which I've called the Audio Freeze. That's a picture of the Teensy Audio Shield. So it's got kind of CD quality audio, but actually I don't tend to use that now. I tend to just use the DAC that comes with it. It's really lo-fi, but for the stuff I'm doing, it sort of sounds fine. So I wanted to make an effect that could manipulate live audio. And Teensy's got a fairly limited amount of memory, 64K, which I think in the kind of microprocessor world of these tiny little dev boards is actually quite a lot, but for doing audio is not very much. So I thought, well, 64K doesn't give me very much room for sampling. I'll just work on like really tiny buffers, like kind of granular synthesis. So I had a 50K buffer, which is about half a second of sound if you're recording it at 16-bit, or about a second in 8-bit. I found 8-bit be a bit too noisy, so I tended to use a smaller buffer. And so essentially it's just constantly sampling the audio as it comes in, and you hit the freeze button and then it will just play back that tiny loop. So this is a rather crude diagram of it. So the buffer there is represented by that cassette tape. And essentially, so the audio is coming in and going out all the time, but as soon as you hit the freeze, it's then playing that buffer back. And then you can then use the controls on it to move a smaller window within that buffer, so you can kind of, and you can adjust the size of that. So that's what that looked like when I breadboarded that up. So I'd used VeriBoard before, and that had worked okay. And it's cheap, and you know, but it becomes more fiddly when you want to make something reasonably complicated. But I found out that you can actually have PCBs manufactured very cheaply. And I always assumed that was something you'd have to have 1,000 done or whatever, and it would cost you thousands of pounds. But now that is actually something you can do. And obviously you can also etch your own PCBs, which I have had a go at, which was complete disaster. I'm going to have another go at it, but at the moment I've just been designing my own. So there's this bit of software called Eagle, which allows you to design PCBs. It's free. I'm pretty sure it's still a free version. There's a maximum PCB size, but for my stuff, that's been ample. So I said their UI is somewhat unorthodox. I think that's probably being quite kind. It felt a bit like, to me, like the person who, or the people who'd written it, hadn't ever used any other software with a user interface before. It sort of eschews every paradigm that I've ever kind of found in software, and everything you think you should be able to do, that's not how you do it. But once you learn it, you know, you kind of get to grips with it. It's very powerful. So you sort of draw out your schematic and you add all the components. And that's the schematic for the first version of the audio freeze. And that's the Teensy is the big rectangle, and the other things are the LEDs and the audio jacks and such. And then when you've got your schematic, then you can turn that into a PCB. So you sort of lay out all your components, and then you play this game that sort of feels like it should be an indie puzzle video game, where you have to get all of the tracks to line up without crossing over any of the other tracks. And that's actually quite fun, until you've spent about 5 hours on it and you realize, oh, there's no way I can get this one to here, which is the last one I need to connect up. But yeah, you do it and it's fun. So basically, Eagle produces these things called Gerber files, which you're going to have manufactured pretty cheaply. As I said, the fabrication is not expensive. It's about £3 a board. And in fact, I've actually found places now that are cheaper than that. And you can have like a minimum of 10 or sometimes even 5 boards. So you don't have to spend a huge amount of money. It took about a month for these to arrive. But there are certain that you can pay more and have them sort of delivered more quickly. And as soon as you can make your own PCBs, you can be a lot more ambitious about what you make. And also you can sort of, and there's loads of kind of schematics online that you can find that you can learn from. So yeah, so once I started doing that and making my own PCBs, that's, you know, sort of really started accelerating. So on all these Eurorack modules, they have sort of a fascia, and the PCB normally sits behind that fascia. And that is then mounted into your case. And most modules that you'll buy commercially use metal panels, but I didn't have that. I used a laser cutter, and I just basically laser cut acrylic. And I'm sure all of you know about laser cutters, but you can create a vector image, pipe that over to the laser cutter, and it will go and cut it out for you. And I was very lucky to know a generous friend who had a laser cutter, who let me use his, which was very useful. But there are other sites like Panoco, where you can have send off your files and they'll send you the laser cut item in the post. So that's the vector image. I'm not sure how well you can see that. But essentially, the color dictates where it's going to cut or whether it's going to sort of engrave rather than cut. And then I use the PCB I designed in Eagle to lay out where everything should be, so that I knew the PCB was where the components were, so I could lay that out as a layer in Inkscape and fit everything around that. So there it is cutting, and it's quite an amazing thing when you've sort of designed something entirely digitally and then this magical robot cuts it out for you, and just watching it, it's totally mesmerizing. And that was really cool. I've covered it there in masking tape, and you'll see why in a second. So that's just acrylic covered in masking tape, I then sort of painted over it, and then peeled off the masking tape, and then it looked like that. And those are the controls on there. But I've got a video which should have time to play, so it's not very long. So hopefully this is actually a more up-to-date version of the audio freeze. It's got a larger buffer and it can do more, but hopefully this will work. So that's a contact mic that's picking up the kalimba and putting it into a preamp and then going straight into the audio freeze. And you can adjust the speed and also the position of the buffer. So that's a very small buffer that's sort of scrolling along, so it's like a very crude form of like time stretching, which I found by accident. I wasn't meaning to do that. That's a little music box I got off eBay where you can program your own melodies by stamping out the paper. Cheese graters are great. Contact mics and cheese graters are very good bedfellows. So I also added like a tape effect later on to try and sound like a broken tape, which is to basically use several low frequency oscillators to adjust the speed of the playback head. And that's me just ramping up the amount of silly tape effect. And there we are. Yeah, so all that's taken from a video that I made that's on YouTube. So if you're interested in those weird sounds, then you can check them out there. So you can build your own one of these if you want. All the files are on GitHub, and including the Gerbers and the schematics. So if you want to build one, then you can. And also, because it's teensy-based, you can program it to do something better or different. Yeah, so I've done a little bit on the 3.2, which is the one that's got 64K. Then the 3.5 came out, and that was really exciting because that had four times as much memory, a whole 256 kilobytes of RAM, which is a massive amount. And at the faster cores, so you can kind of do more. And they've got floating point hardware. So to get stuff working on the 3.2 when I was trying to do DSP, or digital signal processing, I had to write my own fixed point library to do the math quickly enough to get it to work. But on the Teensy, you'd have to do that. It's got a built-in floating point unit. So that really allowed me to do a lot more digital signal processing. And so then I sort of went a bit nuts and made loads. So, I say loads, four. I've sort of made a little suite of them. This is the kind of more up-to-date audio freeze in a much more reduced size panel, which is here. And so it's just sort of like two layers of PCB, so it's narrower and uses up a bit less space in the case. So there it is from the side. That PCB I just had printed, and it comes in the post, and it's a really cool thing. I'd say when you've designed something digitally, and there it's been physically manifested and given to you, it's great. So I've made a bunch of other effects. I've made something called the glitch delay, which is sort of similar to audio freeze. It's sort of like a delay that's playing lots of tiny little buffers jumping about at different pitches, so you can kind of and then you can sort of blend those sounds together. There's videos of that on YouTube. The chrono crusher, as I call it, which is basically just a delay and some reverb and a bit crusher at the end, so you can sort of get like really lo-fi delay sounds. And I wrote the this piano player for radio music. Yeah, all the code and schematics are on GitHub, as I say. They're all open source. You can take them and do what you like with them. So this is a case that I built to house them all in, just made out of a lunchbox that I found on the internet. So I just put some wood into it to make the bars to screw the panels into, and that's just a little power supply. The power supply bit is actually pre-made, and I just wired that into some Veriboard to put the connectors into. So there's a bunch of the ones I've made housed, and I've used aluminium panels there. Now I've got my drill press. I can drill things more easily with less swearing. So that's there is the glitch delay, the chrono crusher, and the audio freeze all together, and that other module sort of guitar preamp, so I can put my guitar through these. So final thoughts. So I'd say if you're interested in building stuff, then do it, because I mean obviously we're all makers of some description, but if particularly if you're interested in building instruments, I'd definitely go for it. It's really rewarding, as I say, getting something in the post that you've made digitally is great. Just sort of having an idea and then weeks and weeks later finally you've got something is great, and with the internet makes everything so much easier. So I've focused primarily on the Teensy, just because that was what I was into, but there's other obviously ways of doing things digitally. There's Bella and there's Raspberry Pi, but also there's analog, and there's a load more stuff that you can do in the analog realm. I haven't done so much of that just because I'm not as experienced in that stuff, but there's loads of crazy things you can do there, and often you get a lot more kind of weird, unexpected stuff happening in analog. That's often why things take so long, because the weird, unexpected things are stopping you from doing what you're trying to do. But if you're using it for audio, that can be really cool. So, how do we get started? As I said, practice your soldering. That's really important. I definitely recommend reading that book. I don't have any interest in it. I don't know Nicholas Collins, but I just think it's a great book, and I'd really recommend it. Build some kits. I think that's a really great way of learning things. Oh, okay. So sorry, I've just seen my time's up. Thank you very much to Electromagnetic Field. I'll just go to the end of this so you can see where I am. So if you want to get any of this stuff, I'm on GitHub, and you can check out my music and some of the music that I've used to make these things. And as I said, I'm going to do a live performance tomorrow at 9 o'clock. You'll be able to see all this stuff kind of being used and hear what it sounds like in a more sort of performance environment. Thank you very much for having me. Cheers.
Thank you. I think we have time for one quick question. If there's someone who has a question, please raise your hand. Okay, so I guess you're just gonna have to mob him after. Thank you very much.
Thanks.